Bradley J, tomorrow is the big day for me. Big day where I drive down to San Diego for San Diego Comic-Con.
Nerd Prom.
Nerd Prom 2018.
And of course, are you looking forward to it?
By the time. Oh, my God, Brad. So I have to tell you some background story. I got called to Superior Court jury duty last year. And it was in the middle of my house move, so I was like, you know what I'll do? I'm going to postpone it. Yeah. And the weird thing about Los Angeles is they let you pick the week that you would like to postpone it. So here's what I did. I go, I'm going to postpone my jury duty until the 4th of July week, because what lawyer is going to want to start a case on the 4th of July week,
you
right?
were calling your shot. Yeah. Yeah. Smart
and
man.
So Monday, I call in, don't have to report. Tuesday, I call in, don't have to report. Wednesday, obviously, it's 4th of July, don't have to report. Great, I'm three-fifths of the way through the week. Oh, man, yeah. I'm not going to get jury duty. Oh, Thursday, I get called in. All right, so I blew it. I absolutely blew it. All right, and then I get up to the jury duty, and they're like, all right, it's going to be a five-day case, so if you can't serve for 5 days, let the court know, and we'll defer you until a couple months from now. And I was like, nah, I can do 5 days. All right, I'll stay for jury duty. And then we get up to the courtroom, and the judge goes, okay, this is going to be a 20 to 22-day case, so we're very excited to start reviewing jurors for this case. And I was like, whoa, Comic-Con. No, Comic-Con. Oh, God. And so I had to bring in all this financial documentation for the judge to say, like, no, look, I already spent a couple $1,000 on this booth, and I can't can't refund it within 60 days. But here's the emotional thing to answer your question about, am I excited about Comic-Con? I got legitimately sad that I was going to miss Comic-Con because of jury duty. Like, the night that I didn't know whether or not I was going to be excused or not, I was like, oh, man, falling asleep. And it was a nice way of coming at the same question from a different way, which is, if someone took away Comic-Con from me, would I be sad? And the answer was yes. I was legitimately sad.
Oh, my gosh.
So, so I'm excited to get down to San Diego. I'm excited in a childish way that I get every year. I like the energy that I come away with from that show. I'm physically exhausted, but I'm emotionally so sustained, because it's like, as my wife always says, the reason you like Comic-Con is it's 5 days of people coming up, giving you money and saying, hey, you're great. Bye.
Yeah.
Like, that's the basic interaction.
What's not to like?
Yeah, like, how do you not, if you're an introvert that works in your studio quietly all year long, and then you have 5 days where people go, hi, here's $20, I think you're great, bye! Like, what's not to like about that?
No, so, you are right. That part of the show is very, very nice.
And as we've talked about before, San Diego is a beast of a show to exhibit at if you're coming from the East Coast or the Midwest or from out of country. But for me, Los Angeles is about a three-hour drive to downtown San Diego. And so it's a pleasant drive down the coast. You're putting on summer tunes with the windows down, looking at the beach as you drive down. And then I have family down there. So I love San Diego in all its aspects.
And now, are you going to take some time and go over to the Sci-Fi Cafe?
Oh, my God. So for those that don't remember, when Brad and Chris and Scott and I used to go to Comic-Con every year, we would stop at this cafe called the Mary Jane Cafe, but they rebrand it every year. The Sci-Fi Channel rebrands it into whatever ridiculous show they're launching on the Sci-Fi Network. And so, Brad, do you remember the year that the waitress had to come up and be like, imagine greater, welcome to the Sci-Fi Cafe. Would you like the eggs? And Chris, Scott, Brad, and I were all dying because the eggs were like, you know, sunny side over Jupiter or whatever, and you're like, come on with these names.
Oh,
what
I know.
The hell?
And you could tell that the waitress was just absolutely, you know, soul crushed that this, you know, she'd have to do this yet again for a bunch of stooges.
Yeah. She's like, this is not what I anticipated for my acting career. I'm doing regional theater in San Diego by night, and I'm working in the Sci-Fi Cafe by day. It's not what I wanted. So anyway, yes, I do go to that. And in general, the one thing that's exciting this year, Brad, that you are not familiar, or I am not familiar with, no one's seen it yet, is San Diego has pedestrianized the huge big street right out in front of the show. So for anyone who's ever been to San Diego, you know there's a giant street out in front of the convention center called Harbor Drive, and they've blocked it off for like five city blocks. And so I think they're going to make it more like a European festival where it's just huge thousands and thousands of people mulling about outside. at like the Walking Dead Pavilion and this and that. So that'll be fun.
So now help me. Does this drive run parallel to the convention center or perpendicular?
Parallel.
Okay. So, and is it on this side of, is it on the convention center side of the railroad tracks or the other side?
It's on, not on the water side. It's towards the gas lamp. So it's the big street just before the railroad, the rail lines.
And they pedestrianized that. That's brilliant.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And it's, if you know how much cement that is, there's, that can fit so many people. So
yeah.
I anticipate that this is stage one because, you know, the Comic-Con has for years been petitioning the city of San Diego saying, like, we are going to move to Los Angeles. You have got to make this convention center bigger. And San Diego's like, nah, I don't know. And every year they're like, you've got to make this bigger. And I think this is the first step towards making a European style convention out front with those gigantic circus tents that they do in Europe.
That would be really exciting. Will they have like, and I would imagine they would have like, that'd be the perfect place to put food trucks and outdoor booths and stuff like that. You could do a lot with that.
So I'm kind of excited about it because to me, this is them dipping a toe to test the waters if that would be possible.
Yeah.
Although my fear then is, would they then move my booth out to one of those outdoor tents? Because I bet that's hotter than balls in a San Diego summer out there.
Yeah.
So, what was I going to say? Anyway, it's fun. I'm excited for it. I'm excited to see how that'll work. And I also, for Patreon listeners, I want you to know that I am going to be giving a video tour of my booth and my setup and the materials that I bring to the show just for our Patreon backers. So look for that video. It's probably already up by now by the time you're listening to this.
Yeah.
And I'm sure I was delightful on the video. Let's just make that clear right now.
But I have no doubt in my mind.
Yeah, that'll be up on patreon.com/Comic Lab. And speaking of which, why don't I just go ahead and welcome everybody and say, welcome to Comic Lab, the show about making comics.
And making a living from comics. I'm Brad Geiger, editor of webcomics.com and cartoonist of Evil Inc.
And I'm Dave Kellett, cartoonist of Drive and Sheldon and co-director of Stripped.
And this week's hour of comics advice is made possible by your support at patreon.com/Comic Lab. So Dave, this is kind of cool. We got fan mail.
This has happened a few times this week. I don't know what happened where all of a sudden everyone's like, I'm going to write a letter to Brave Dad. Dad and Brave? Wait, no, Brad and Dave. Dad and Brave.
Dad
is
and
like
Brave is a good name for like a morning drive team.
I was going to say that sounds like a Disney movie. Dad and Brave.
Dad and Brave.
the story of a young Navajo boy who grows up with his father.
And a little redheaded girl who can shoot arrows really, really well.
Oh yeah! Oh, Brave! Yeah, I forgot about that movie. Boy, that movie fell on an unfortunate storyline. It kind of didn't go anywhere in the second and third act.
Yeah,
but anyway, that's Dave Kellett's 10-second review of Brave from Pixar.
So listen, to do the earlier emails that we have gotten justice. It isn't the first time we've gotten kind emails, but here's a couple that really kind of struck us in a happy way this week, and we want to share them. The first one, in an earlier episode of Comic Lab, I was talking about collaboration, and I said, hey, I want to know, I wanted to encourage more collaboration. And I said, listen, if you've had a good experience with collaboration, why don't you write in and tell us about it? And so this guy did. And he says, I'm a fairly new listener to Comic Lab, and I am thoroughly enjoying the advice I get from you guys. On the episode from June 21st, you mentioned that you wanted to hear about collaborations that benefited the comic. Well, I have a very good case in which a good friend of mine who has written for DC Comics, storyboarded for BoJack Horseman, done webcomic tie-ins for popular TV shows, insisted he edit the strips for my current, and this is interesting, Dave, he insisted on editing the strips of this person's current webcomic that's called Home-Based, which centers on the life of a stay-at-home dad. He didn't take over the writing, mind you, but he wanted to make concise and to-the-point notes on what worked and what didn't work, and his suggestions usually inspired a better outcome or a punchier version of the original comic. He says, I won't get into details, but he had a habit of peaking too early with his punchline writing. In other words, he'd put the punchline in the middle and then have a couple of panels of post punchline, which let down the overall comic.
Right.
And that goes back, Dave, to something we might have to talk about on Comic Lab. I know I've talked about it before, but the concept of knowing what your punch word is and never putting anything after that unless it's funnier. And that sounds like what he was having a problem with, and this guy helped him out with. Anyway, back to the letter. In summary, he allowed me to continue to handle the writing, but he helped shape the writing into the best version of what it could be. And that's signed Paul Kijeji. And Paul, thank you for writing in. I'm glad to hear that collaboration is working out well for you. And by the way, Dave, the idea of having somebody, not necessarily like a full creative partner, not an artist or a writer, but just somebody whose judgment you really trust, editing your stuff, not only editing in the sense of spelling errors and grammatical errors, which are pretty crucial, but editing for effectiveness of your writing, editing for content. I think that's a brilliant idea, don't you?
Oh, yeah. I find it fascinating that this collaboration grew out of a friendship respect where the friend basically said, you've got something here. There's good here. You just need to be directed 3 degrees this way. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
And that's not an insult. That's saying there's something here. If you just tinker it a teeny tiny bit. Being able to trust that friend means respecting their opinion, their skill set, all that sort of thing. And so clearly this friend has that. I mean, given his biography there. But it's also true, Brad, that little bits of directional advice that you have given on this show, I have actually heard your voice in my head at times when I'm writing. Specifically,
oh, you poor guy, I wouldn't wish that on anybody.
How we doing in there today, Brad? Oh, Dave. Oh, we're having a great day inside your head. That specific editorial note of end on the funniest thing you have, don't do a follow-up. There have been times where, God, I just wanted to do a follow-up, and I hear Brad going, David, no,
stop it there.
Stop it. Put the pen down. Don't go further. So I want to thank you, Sister Mary Margaret, with your ruler for keeping me on track there. Thank you.
Standing
for
there ready to give those wrists a snap.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I thought this letter was really touching, and it's good to see that it's working for them. And hopefully something like this can be found in other people's lives that are listening. So can I read our second letter, Brad? This one, I think, really warmed both of our hearts. So Dave and Brad, love Comic Lab, and it has inspired me to get off my old butt and finally do something about my art. I had 20 years retired as an Army tanker, then 10 years as a realty officer, but something was missing. Now I have been accepted into SCAD, and that's Savannah College of Art and Design, for sequential art at 53 years old. LOL. Wish me luck, and I hopefully won't drive my wife nuts. Love your show and listen all the time. And then he happens to add, if you need something from Japan, just let me know. I guess he's currently living in Japan. Oh. But I love the fact that someone, a retired vet who had a great career in two different fields, now at 53 is going, you know what, though? My heart was always with cartooning. And that makes me really happy. That makes me really, really happy.
And going to SCAD is super exciting because that's some really high level instruction going on there. You've done guest lectures at SCAD, haven't you?
Yes, Scott Kurtz and I went down and did a really big guest lecture one time, and then I went down a second time and did some 4 or 5 different classes, and then a medium sized lecture for the school. And they have great facilities. They have it's an amazing environment in downtown Savannah. You drive outside Savannah and it gets really ding, 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 ding real quick. But in Savannah itself is a very cultured city, a very, very delightful people. And the professor group at SCAD is amazing. In fact, they invited me to come down. I don't know if you know this, to teach for a semester.
Oh, is that just, right?
It didn't coincide well with my schedule because unfortunately, Gloria's seasons tend to really ramp up in summertime. And the kids, of course, obviously are off school in summertime. So there's no real good time of the year for me to go like, bye, I'm gone for 3 or 4 months to go teach at SCAD. So maybe later when everybody's off at college, I'll be able to do that. But I would love to go down and lecture there. So I wish this listener all the best. Jeff, Brad and I are so happy for you, and we wish you all the best at SCAD. That's fantastic.
Wait a minute. Do we need something from Tokyo? He's making the offer. What do we want to have this guy send us from Tokyo?
I mean, Brad, I'm not dead inside. I'll eat some pocky. I'm not.
Have you ever been to Tokyo?
No, you have. And your photos made me so jealous of you and the family.
Oh, we went for 2 weeks and it was, and what I want from Tokyo is a way to get back to Tokyo. We had so much, we would cram everything into a day and be dead on our feet and come back to the hotel. And of course, you know, my kids were a little bit younger then, but being kids, they had boundless energy. And I had nothing, but as tired as I was full of excitement energy. And so we'd be sitting there and my older son would be like, hey, let's go down to Akihabara Station. And I'm like, okay. And we'd stumble out, leaving everybody else, you know, sleeping inside the hotel room. And we'd go stumbling out, figure out our way through the subway system, which I got better at as time went by, and then go just walking around, just looking at things. You know, it was amazing. It was one of the best 2 weeks of my life. It was being able to go down there. So what I want from Tokyo is a chance to get back to Tokyo.
What I want for Tokyo is something that will never happen, which is there is a realm of possibility. I've jokingly said before that I would get invited to a European show, like a friend, like an Angoulême, right? To be a guest cartoonist at one of those shows. There is no way that I would ever be invited to like Comiket in Tokyo to exhibit at one of those shows. Like, I just can't imagine the Japanese artist going, you know what? All this amazing manga, don't want it. Let's invite that Dave Kellett guy. He does that script or that comic called Drive. That's what we here in Japan want to read.
That's what we want. Yeah, exactly. Let's bring him out.
Let's bring that guy over. I just don't see.
And let's bring his friend Brad too. If we're gonna fantasize, let's go for the whole shooting match.
Let's go for the whole shooting match and free pocky for both of them.
That's right. That's right.
So yeah, I just can't see me ever being invited out to a comic show in Japan.
No,
I would love it. I would absolutely love it. That, or I would also love. Listen to me now. I'm just gonna be like, and I want a pony, and I want. I was gonna say I'd love to get down to an Australian show at some point, but that would be fun.
You spend an awful lot of time on an airplane there. I don't know that I could. Of course, you know, Japan was the same thing. You spend an awful lot of time on a plane there, but woof. I don't know. Between Tokyo and Australia, I still think I want to go back to Japan.
Well, that's in the brief 2 years that I lived in Europe, one of the things that was funny to me was that Australians they kind of go on walkabout in their late teens and early 20s and just go on trips around the world and live and work around. And when I moved to England, the customs officer was like, all right, where are you from? And he's looking at my passport. All right, U.S. All right, what are you here for? I was like, well, I'm going to be studying World War II cartooning, and then I'm going to work for a little while. And he goes, how long is your anticipated visa for? And I go, I think it was for 9 months plus 2 weeks at the end of my studies. And he goes, you know what? Let's give you a full year. And I go, and he starts to stamp my passport. And I go, oh, wow, a full year? And his this is the exact phrase. He goes, you're not Australian. Those people will stay forever. And I was like, wow, stinging words from the British customs officer for Australians. Yeah, yikes. So anyway, boy, we got off topic there. But yeah, I would love to get to Japan. And it seems to me, comics-wise, such a different, I don't want to say garden, but like, how do you describe a place where something grows without using the phrase garden? Like the environment that American comics flourish in, I understand, I get it. The environment, even that European comic, those albums, you know, that the Europeans read, I understand that market. It seems so interesting and different to me how Japanese manga is made and produced and packaged. You know, you get those like phone book sized books.
That's just it. You'd go to the equivalent of a 7-Eleven down there, and that's what I was just going to say. You'd pick up a phone book, and it would be just nothing but manga. And you saw people, you know, what we would consider in the States openly reading, you know, not hiding it. They'd be reading manga including some very explicit manga out on the subway, going from place to place. And it was in everybody's hands. It was amazing to see the way that culture really embraced comics.
And because there's more mass market to that mass, just meaning there's more people buying those books. The prices, you can correct me if I'm wrong, are more reasonable, right? That entire phone book for like $5, $6, $7 or something like that?
The equivalent, yes.
Whereas in America, you get, 32 pages for, I don't even know what a standard floppy goes for these days. Is it like $19?
Oh,
what does a floppy go for in a comic
upwards of like $5, $6 at least.
Yeah, and the Japanese market never had what we had in the 50s, 60s, 70s, which is when Congress and our overall culture started to say, hey, no more horror comics, no more violent comics, no more sex comics.
Yeah.
So basically American comics got winnowed down to The New Yorker, superhero and cape comics, and then comic strips, and maybe an Archie, you know, and that was about it. Whereas Japanese, you have every taste is catered to in comics, and it's amazing, you know?
Yeah, they never had that really bad period of time. And just, by the way, because I've been trying to get my boys to read it, and they have not been able to really glom onto it. If you're interested in the effect of that time in today's comics, there's a great book called The 10-Cent Plague. And you learn so much about American comics history reading that book. If you're like me and you really enjoy kind of learning about comics and what brought us to where we are, 10-Cent Plague is one of the best books you can read on the subject.
Yeah, it was an extinction event for comics in the sense of,
yes,
not extinction like destruction of all life, but that it was a dieback of a bunch of different genres of comics. And then only 4 or 5 flourished and kept going, you know.
And the ones that survived under such strict rules. They couldn't do, you know, there was such a range of stuff they couldn't do that it really stifled comics expression for decades after that.
Oh, yeah. And you see, you can draw a direct line as to why the Haight-Ashbury comics in San Francisco got so weird, because they were like, God, anything other than the comics code stuff, please, for God's sakes,
yes,
you know,
yes,
anything else. So, hey, why, boy, did we get way off topic.
We're going far afield.
We didn't plan to talk about any of this, but that's all right. Well, before we get into our first topic, Brad, I wanted to mention to everybody, we're inching past 200 patrons on Patreon. And just a reminder that if you're on the fence about it and would like to support the show, you are directly making new shows possible by helping us pay our editor. You're getting yourself the ability to get the shows early. You're getting almost, I think, 10 hours now of extra Comic Lab podcast called Pro Tip Episodes.
Yeah.
And you get the ability to submit questions at the $5 and $10 level. But also, when we get 250 patrons, we're going to try out a little something we call Video Comic Lab, which is the two of us in the recording booths, but with cameras on. And so I just want to remind everybody, pretty excited. We're excited to get to that. So if you're on the fence, join us over at patreon.com/comiclab.
Very good. So, Dave, let's take our first topic. And here's something that this is a variation of a speech that I've given some of the students that I've taught teaching sequential art and entrepreneurship at the college level here and there. And what I start out with is to ask them, how many of you have been told that you're talented? And of course, a lot of hands go up. Almost every hand goes up. And I'm like, well, I've got some bad news and some good news for you. The bad news is you're not talented. None of you are talented. And although you may be good at certain things, it's not what you think. You've been told that you had these gifts. Here's another thing that they call them, gifts. And you've told that you've got talents, and you've been given skills, or I'm sorry, that's the wrong word. You've been given abilities. And it may be a little bit true. You might have a little bit better hand-eye coordination than the regular person, or you might have a little bit better sense of aesthetic than your baseline person. But you're really not talented. What you have as an artist, as a writer, what you have is a skill, okay? And skills need to be developed. You need to practice a skill. You need to improve a skill. You need to repeat that skill so many times that you start to improve the quality of your ability to do that skill. You're not talented. You're skillful. You have a skill. And although that may bring you down in the moment where, you know, your grandma has been telling you for, you know, 10 years that you're talented, and here comes this jerk and he's going to tell you that you're not. The truth is, talent only gets you so far, right? When you go out into a bigger world, you go out trying to get a job, you go out trying to publish your comic against a backdrop of a lot of other people doing the same thing. You're going to find that your talent only gets you so far. And if you sign on to the belief that you are talented, then when you come up across somebody who's doing way better than you, then that's the end of the road for you, because your talent only got you so far. And you haven't at yourself as somebody being somebody who has to continually improve. Talent is finite. You're only as talented as you are. But if you look at your ability to do comics, to do art and writing and creativity in general, if you look at that as a skill, when you go out and you find somebody who's better than you, you've got one thought in mind and one thought only: I need to keep practicing. I need to get better. I need to improve my skill. So to all of my students and anybody that I talk to at like a comic convention or online, I really try to emphasize the fact that you're not talented. You're skillful. And skill is something that's going to get you a lot further in life than talent. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, I want to thank you for telling me that I'm not talented. I feel great. I feel great right now. As if I'm not swimming in enough insecurity. This is great to hear that I'm not talented. No, I think this is a great point, and I'm fascinated by it. I'm trying to think of it in terms of a sports analogy, and you tell me if this works or if this doesn't work.
Yeah.
If you're in a high school basketball team and you are very tall, very long limb, super tall, that is what you would consider your talent.
Yes.
But then
that's what you're born with. There's
a Spud Webb on your team who's 5 foot, whatever he was, and he out hustles, works practice after day. When practice is over, he stays around on the court and keeps taking shots. He goes and runs an extra 4 miles when the team gets back from their 2 mile run. He is out hustling you and working on his game, working on his footwork, working on his dribbling, working on his shooting. And so that tall kid, all he can do as a guard is just stand there and block, but he's not a good basketball player.
Right.
Because he was born with talent, but did not cultivate his skill. Whereas that Spud Webb character practice was not necessarily born with the quote talent for basketball, i.e. height, but out hustled and outworked so many other people to become better than everyone else around him. That a good way to
No, that's a perfect way to look at it. Certain things you can be born with, but that can only get you so far. And in your basketball analogy, that's perfect. Being born tall, you could put that under the talent category. But I always think about something you said to me. This may have been San Diego Comic-Con years past. We were talking about somebody, you know, who just was one of these people that burst onto the scene. And you said, well, listen, I may not be able to draw like that person or write like that person, but I tell you what, I can out hustle that person any day. You know, that was kind of your attitude, where you said, I can out hustle somebody. You know?
I said that? Yeah, good. All right. Good. Yeah. Good job. Pass me. I think that's true. I think I'm not even in the top tier of artistry, and I'm not even in the top tier of writing, but I will out hustle most people. I mean, by a lot of measures, my early comics, I should not have had a career for it, but I just kept at it, basically, you know.
Yeah.
You can kind of take the attitude of I don't even know how to describe it, just that your work can get you where you want to go. You just got to put in the hours, you know.
Yeah, that's the absolute truth. And I think I mentioned this on a previous show. I was going back through an earlier graphic novel because I had to reproduce it for digital. And I was reading it and I was really like, oh my gosh, you know, some of this stuff is just, the punchlines are not landing, the art is not good. But I had to do all of that so I could get to a point where I actually do feel pretty good about the work that I'm doing. And that goes back to this whole idea of we see artists all the time saying, oh, I've got a bunch of crumpled up sketches at home. Don't I don't like that idea. I don't like the idea of crumpling up your old work and throwing it away. Savor that. Savor those horrible drawings. Savor those mistakes in proportion and anatomical nightmares. All that stuff gets you to a much better place. And it's actually good to save some old drawings, especially when we're talking about drawings, because that's such a quickly identifiable thing. But certainly writing falls into this category too. But it's good to keep that old work and go back a year or two later and look at that and have a good old-fashioned cringe at yourself, and then allow yourself to feel the satisfaction of knowing that you've gotten so much better since then. That's a good thing to do.
Can I tell you the flip side of this too, is that you and I have both had this frustration, because I think in a lot of ways you and I are alike, because you being a much better artist than I am, I would still say, and I think you would accept this as not a wounding comment, you and I are not the best artists. We're not the best writers, but we outwork everybody, right? Or a lot of people. We outwork a lot of people. I don't want to say everybody. We outwork a lot of people. But what breaks our heart is the occasional times where we do come across that guy that's 7'2" in comics, i.e. born with a bunch of talent, but applied no work, didn't work on their skill set, didn't work on their craft. So they have the talent, but they never put in the time to develop their skill set. And we see it as you and I not being naturally talented artists. We have worked and honed as best we can so far to get where we are, right? But it breaks our heart when someone in their 1920s, 30s has the talent, but has like either given up or puts in an hour a month on their work. And you're like, you could be so amazing if you just applied yourself.
You started off very, very good. You started off better than most. And unfortunately, that's where you're going to stay, or you're going to start to backslide as other people start to surpass you. You know,
right. I had a funny thought the other day, because you had said that. What was that thing that you can pick two? You have three.
The Venn diagram. You can produce fantastic art. You can hit deadlines, and you can be a nice person and easy to work with. Those are your three circles of the Venn diagram. And to have a career in comics, I believe that you have to choose at least two. The best is to be all three, but you have to be at least two of those things.
Oh, well, so I thought of a reverse Venn diagram when I was driving the other day. And my thought was, you get to pick one. You can either be lazy, you can be terrible at art, or you can be horrible at business. You get to pick one of those, and you can still be a good cartoonist, but you get to pick one of those.
In other words, if you're going to have a flaw, you can only have one of those flaws.
Right. So that's the reverse Venn diagram of talent and skill. You can either be lazy, you can be terrible at art, or you can be terrible at business. So that's one of the three. Because we've seen friends who are amazing at art, terrible at business, but they still find a way to make a living. We've found friends that are amazing at art, amazing at business, but are lazy, still find a way to make a living. You know, the reverse Venn diagram works,
because that
too.
Business always floats them through. You know, they're smart enough to know a good opportunity when they see it.
Yeah, they're savvy enough to know when to say yes, exactly.
Yep, exactly.
Anyway, so I like this concept of talent versus skill. I think this is a good way to think about how you're approaching your own self identification as an artist. So I think that's good.
Yeah. Think of
all
yourself.
Right, let's move
as
on to the next one.
Skill.
We have this one's kind of a fun sorbet in between big questions, a palate cleanser. So Dave and Brad, I know when I'm drawing, music helps me get into that nice productive state. What are some of your all-time favorite musical or audio accompaniments while working or just in general?
Oh, I have such opinions on this. Number one, I have to have silence when I'm writing. It's got to be silence. In fact, I will be, even if I'm in an empty house, I still have to go into a room in that house and shut the door. I need to be cocooned to really write well. So writing, I need silence. Penciling, I might listen to some music or something light. But when it comes to inking, I really like to have audio in the background. And it's got to be, the bad thing was, for so many years, I worked nights at the newspaper and days on my comic. So I always used to tell people the last TV show I followed with any regularity was Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which is what, a good 25 years old now. I completely left off with, like, people would talk about TV shows and I would be like, I have no idea what you're talking about. I don't watch TV. And so when I left the newspaper 5 years ago, all of us, and with Netflix and stuff, all of a sudden I could catch up on all of this TV that I had been missing. You know, I could finally understand what people were talking about when they, you know, when they mentioned some TV show that they'd been watching, like Arrested Development. I finally understood what Arrested Development memes were all about. And, what happened was I got into this jag where I have to have something that is interesting and particularly something that has unique voices. And I'll tell you what I mean about that in a minute, because I try to look at the screen as seldom as possible. I want to focus on my drawing and just let my mind take care of the audio.
Right.
So it needs to have unique voices, but it also has to fit that category of being interesting enough that it's not boring, but not so interesting that I stop drawing and start following the video. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'll float with music for a little bit, my tastes are so narrow that pretty soon even the music that I listen to gets very repetitive, and repetitive bothers me. So TV series are perfect. And right now my current favorite is House MD, which, do you remember a bit of Fry and Laurie from BBC? It was a sketch comedy show. Well, Hugh Laurie turns out to play this doctor. And we talked about this before, kind of like if Sherlock Holmes was a doctor. The neat thing about it is it's got a bunch of very identifiable voices. So they're not homogenized. They're all unique enough that you can follow it almost like a radio play without looking at the screen. It's very interesting stuff, but there's always a mystery. There's always a puzzle to be unraveled. But this sounds like damning with faint praise. It's not so enveloping that I stop drawing and I start watching the screen. So that's my criteria. It's got to be interesting, but not super compelling. And Star Trek is another great one for this. I started watching Deep Space Nine because I would remember Scott and Chris, particularly when we were doing Webcomics Weekly, they would be so into talking about that show and I never knew what was going on. And those plots, you know, were not plots. It was very good writing, but you could follow along without listening, without watching the screen. And the voices on that show were so unique that once you understood who was who, you didn't need to look at the screen to know who was talking.
Right.
They were very unique voices on that show. And so I truly enjoyed all of that. And when I do listen to music, I think all of the music that I listen to is slower tempo music. For example, right now I'm on a huge blues kick. Albert Collins I've listened to more Albert Collins in the last 3 months than I think at any other time in my life. And especially what I look for is that strong guitar and then the Hammond organ. The organ that they originally built for churches that couldn't afford pipe organs, that then got acquired by blues musicians, and they just made it part of their music. If you've got blues that has that organ sound in it, man, I am listening to that at full blast. But everything I listen to in particular tends to be a lot slower tempo music. I'm surprised by that.
So Stefan Passis has a really interesting way of writing comics. Mm-hmm. He goes to a coffee shop, one specific coffee shop. He sits in a window seat kind of facing outward so that the crowd is definitely at his back. So he's not seeing other human faces around him.
Right.
But looking out a window at people walking by, he wears his baseball cap really low on his face to block out his eyes from other people. And then he puts on over-ear headphones and blasts super loud rock, death metal. I think it's rock or death metal. So loud that it basically blocks out conscious thought. And then he's writing almost from emotion. And if I remember correctly, he overwrites. So he'll write 30 comics to get 2 comics out of it.
Wow.
And so he doesn't allow himself to edit. He just basically goes with all this super duper loud music playing in his ear. And it's fascinating to see. It's just weird to see someone who writes totally different from me sitting in my little brown chair in my studio, sipping coffee, listening to Django Reinhardt and going, no, this would make a pleasant comic. Meantime, Stefan Pass is in a coffee shop, not looking at anyone going,
wow. Yeah. I don't know that I could even concentrate that way, let alone write a comic.
I think the older I get, the more I have come to realize that some people have battle to varying degrees the number of voices or even their own voice that they hear in their head.
Yeah.
And so for some people, it's critically important to the creative process to mute or nullify that voice somehow. And for other people, they want to encourage that voice. So they want to be in a quiet room to hear more of what their inner voice is telling them, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting that the more artists I've come to talk with this about, that you would be surprised how very different people's internal monologues are when you really crack that egg and get into what they actually hear in their brain. It's fascinating. Mm-hmm.
That's why that's part of that. It's really interesting to hear all these dots connect, because one of the ways that I always kind of recommend to people in brainstorming and writing is I go way to the, I bury the needle on the other side of the spectrum. I try to get so quiet that I almost am hovering between being awake and asleep.
Yeah, that's me. That's me. You know? Yes, yes, yes.
And sometimes I fall right asleep. and then it's like, you know, my wife comes home and says, well, what did you accomplish today? And it's like, well, I did some creative stuff.
the shoes are off. The yep. feet are out in front of you. The top button on your jeans is undone. Your drool is coming down your face. Oh, it's been a big day at work, honey.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't tell you what I did yet, but I think subconsciously I had a home run out there somewhere.
Well, I know that's how I do it, because sometimes my father-in-law or my wife will, from across the room, go like, are you okay? What are you doing? And apparently I've just been sitting stock still for 2 minutes, staring with a 1,000-yard stare,
yeah,
writing a comic in my head, you know, from some event that I just saw. So I'm like you. I sit very still or light music with a lot of coffee. There's always a lot of coffee. That's unfortunately the...
Yeah.
I'm heading towards Kitty's Node Country, my friend. That's where I'm heading. Too much coffee on my plate. That's a problem. Well, let's. I have a fun one I'd like to end the day with, young Bradley. I think.
Yes.
Are you okay with a challenge question?
Yes.
Not a challenge question. Oh, by the way, we have to get back to our 5-year plan question. We didn't get back to.
Gosh,
that.
I'm having a harder time than I thought I would with that. I'm having a really difficult time. I was talking to my wife about this the other night. I'm having a hard time figuring out what my 5-year plan should be.
So now for you, the 5-year plan is as far out as you want to go. You don't want to go to 10-year plan? Because you can really shoot the moon with a 10-year plan.
I don't even know. I don't even know what I would do for 10 years. Can I be totally honest with you? Right now, I am so... My head is in a place where I just want to keep things going. I want to keep things going. I don't want things to fall apart. It's like if I was building a statue out of pebbles by balancing one pebble on top of another. And I've got it up to like a 6-foot tower now. And I keep putting pebbles on, and I just got it the way I wanted. And I just want it to stay there now.
Oh.
I just don't want it to fall apart. I don't want anything to happen to it. I got it. I want to keep it. And to even think about 5 years down the road or 10 years, I don't even know what I don't know what I would wish for.
I like that in because keeping with your beautiful analogy, which I think is really lovely, the way you describe this as little pebbles. So me saying, now I want a 5-year plan out of you, Brad. That's like me saying, hey, Brad, put this smooth 20-pound river stone on top of all your pebbles.
Yes.
And you're like, no, it's going to knock over all my pebbles.
It's going to ruin everything.
Well, because I love all my pebbles.
You know, and this is something that, you know, if people like you and I don't want to say we struggle with it, but you know, people are like, well, you know, of course those guys are doing okay in webcomics. They were around since the beginning, and you know, there wasn't anything in their way. And we've talked about that before. Having started in the early 2000s was definitely a good thing. But what people forget is that we were in the game every day of the year for the last 20 years.
Yeah.
And that's, yeah, that's what people tend to forget. It's like, well, they started way back then. Well, yeah, you're right. I did start. And then I worked my ass off every day since then. But that it's been a long, for what I'm trying to say is, for a long time, I wasn't making a lot of money at webcomics. I wasn't right. making my living doing webcomics. And then there was a lot of time that I spent where I was kind of making half of my income in webcomics and half at the day job. And then, as I've talked about on this show before, when I quit my day job and the advertising cycle went plummeting due to ad blockers and I lost a whole bunch of ad revenue, I struggled for a couple of years where I really was scrambling to try to figure out how to make this work again. And then crowdfunding started to pick up and Patreon came along, and now I'm at a place where I'm not wondering where next month is going to come from. I can kind of plan, I can sure. budget for the first time in a long time now. And this is the second year of my really being able to breathe a little bit more. And I don't know what the hell I'm going to do for 10 years.
So here's what I'm hearing as a friend. I'm yeah. hearing you say, Dave, I've finally gotten to where I want to go. Don't mess this up with your dumb five-year plan. Don't make me change anything. I finally got it. What I represent to you with this five-year plan thing, Brad, is you've finally gotten your coffee mix right at the restaurant. You put just yes. the right amount of sugar, and I'm the waitress coming around going, refill, honey? And you're no. like, no, don't touch my coffee.
I know it'll warm up the cup, but I'm okay with not being warm, but I just got my sugar and cream ratio perfect.
I know, you're like, I just got the ratio right. Edith, don't put the coffee in. I just don't want you... So here's the fear, though, because you know this intuitively. It's like a shark. If you stop swimming, you're going to die. And I think a five-year plan is good for you and it's good for me, because I don't want you to start Frank Sinatra-ing this in a few years and going, regrets, I've had a few. You now in the last 2 years have been the most successful I've ever seen you. So now is the time to start building on that and thinking like, well, what could I do that I never thought I could do before, you know?
No, I think you're right. And I'm not gonna give up on it.
No, here's my immediate thought about how we can amend this, because this might be fun. Mm-hmm. What if instead of you making a five-year plan for you, I as your friend make a five-year plan for you, and you as my friend make a five-year plan for me, and we pitch it to the other one as like, this is what you should do next with your career.
Wow. Okay, I would totally. I'm always more comfortable messing in somebody else's life than I am with my own.
you've said repeatedly on this show, you're like, I'm dying for somebody to ask me what they're doing wrong. This yeah. is your chance, Brad, to tell me all the ways I'm effing it up.
I don't think it's about what you're doing wrong, but I definitely knew if I was Dave Kellett, what I would do next.
Oh, this is fascinating. So isn't this a better angle? Maybe yeah. this is a better way to do it.
There's no pain in it. It's like, I know what I would do because I don't have to do it.
Well, all right. So I think we do a one-year plan, a five-year plan, and then a shoot the moon 10-year plan for you. And what's fun is I have a 3-hour drive to San Diego Comic-Con to think about how I would improve your career.
Yeah.
And you have an equal amount of time to think about how you improve my career. Or not improve. Yeah. Improve is not the right word.
Or it's like where you would develop it. What yeah. direction would you go?
Yeah, like that's yes. Like given the infinite paths in front of you, which five will you choose over the next 5 years? Or which five will you choose over the next year to tackle?
Yeah.
And some of it might just be stasis. Like I might just say, you're doing everything right with Patreon, keep going on that one. But I might say, hey, you're publishing, have you considered doing this?
Right.
Anyway, all right. I like that idea. All right. So I'm going to think about your career, and you'll think about mine in a 1, 5, and 10 year plan. And we'll come back around on that. I like that idea. All right. But yes. here's what I wanted to end the show with today.
Okay.
And this is a different kind of a question. And I asked this question not knowing what my answer will be. So this will be kind of a fun off-the-cuff answer for me, too. So, Brad, mm-hmm. when we were younger, we all had cartoonists that inspired us, that were aspirational for what we wanted to be. It was Charles Schulz. It was Jim Davis. It was Watterson. It was Gary Larson. It was Burke Breathed, right? It was right. all those people right. that we read growing up. But what cartoonist alive or even dead, I'll say, alive or dead, most inspires your career today? Not the childhood Brad Geiger, but today. Mm-hmm. Who do you look to, alive or dead, and get inspired by for what they did?
That's a really difficult question. And you pitched it when we were doing pre-show prep, and I've been pondering it ever since. It's gonna sound hackneyed for me to say this, but when I think about where I want to be down the road, when I think about the, you know, or in terms of what's inspiring me to do better and stuff like that, I keep going back to Scott. I look at Scott and what he's built with having a business manager in Corey, and I'm talking obviously of Scott Kurtz. We had him on the show a couple weeks ago, and how he has, I don't want to say he's stepped back, but he's brought in, for example, Dylan McConnis to be a co-writer, and he's brought in different people to help work on the different properties that he has, and so he's kind of taking more of an executive role, and he's still very much involved in the creative process of all of it, but he's not sitting there, you know, he's not banging out a bunch of stuff. He's got people that he's brought in, and he's delegated some of that work to. And also has somebody looking after some of the business things that he can trust, and that he signs off on. I think that's where I'd like to see myself go. Very much so. I think he's very inspiring in that regard. That he's really taken the idea of a webcomic and built it into a small business to the extent that he's got actual employees that he is responsible for. And I think that's a really admirable place. That's something that I would like for myself. So I think my answer is actually Scott Kurtz.
That's a totally great and valid answer. Yes.
Yeah.
And I'll give you a sneak peek. Part of my 5-year plan for you is actually to get you employees. So yes, it's good that we're on the same track about that. That's good. All right. So who is that? The only one? Is that the only one that inspires you? It's fair if it is.
That is the only one that inspires me directly. I mean, there are parts of other people's careers that I, or even parts of their personality that I would like for myself. For example, when Danielle Corsetto came to Philadelphia not so long ago, we had dinner together, and she was talking to me about this book tour that she had put together. And it was just something that it was just every stop she had, she knew where she was going to go, but there might be a stop here or there that she wasn't 100% sure yet where she was going to stay, you know, or that was at least the impression I was getting. It's like, it was very loose. It was very spontaneous. And a lot of it was built on people she wanted to visit. And I'd like to grab some of that kind of spontaneity. I find very inspiring. I would love to be able to have that kind of spontaneous attitude. So a portion of that for sure. In terms of a big picture, I think that Scott really is kind of the main target.
I think he will be very pleased to hear that, as he should. That is a very nice compliment to him.
So,
and what he's built.
Dave, what cartoonist inspires your cartoon career today?
Okay, so I actually want to pick up on the way you described it, because I think that's a good way to look at it, is that in my adult life, I don't know that I have a quote-unquote hero that encompasses everything that I want, if that makes sense. But the way you describe it, there are aspects of like 5 or 6 different cartoonists and the way they structure their careers that I'm like, I want to learn from them. They are showing me a path that I could walk down. And I'm excited by it, right? So like you said, Danielle gives you the courage to embrace more of a not a carefree attitude, but a, what was the way you described it?
Spontaneity.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I can respect that. But for me personally, spontaneity is not what I'm looking for in my life. But from Danielle and from Chris Straub and from others that we have, I am admiring of the ability to, and from you, the ability to end a project. I think that's an interesting skill set to learn from. From Matt Inman and Penny Arcade and Scott and Zach Wienersmith, I'm admiring of the ability to hire in people with skill sets that are not your own that help you focus on being a cartoonist and grow your business. I mean, I guess underlying all this is the assumption that, like, okay, we've essentially made it by some way of describing it. So now what are the next steps, right? So part of it is managing projects like Danielle or Chris, you know, in terms of being able to end it, managing whole businesses like Matt Inman or Scott Kurtz or Penny Arcade or Zach Wienersmith or anybody in terms of bringing in employees. I also know what I don't want to do, but I'm very admiring of. I don't want to be a publisher, but I'm very admiring of Spike with Iron Circus Comics and what she's been able to build with that. I think that's amazing. Yeah. Even though I don't personally want to be a publisher, I think that's very admirable. And I try to learn from what she's doing a lot. And then creatively, I really like and admire, once you've made it, being able to take that success and parlay it into something else. And I think Zach Wienersmith, who we had on the show a couple weeks ago, has done that well. I think David Malky and Ryan North have done that well in terms of taking a project or the skills you have from one creative outlet and transferring it into another one, like making board games or making an entire festival in Zach's case, or making short films, you know, whatever it is. Making the movie Stripped kind of showed me that, like, I can take my skill set of cartooning and with the right other people involved, I can apply it to a very different kind of project. So yeah. I'm in great admiration of cartoonists that take their cartooning skills and go, all right, I've made it as a cartoonist. I can do this as my day job. Now my new inspirational nights and weekend job will be creating a festival, creating a board game, creating a short film, creating a video game, whatever it is that they're working on. And I'm admiring of that for my next 10 years of what, like, what can I do that's the new sort of side project that builds off my cartooning but is not cartooning. So, but for me, the big one is, like you were saying with Scott, I think the key for growing my career at this point is bringing in more people, either on a short-time basis, a part-time basis, or a full-time basis to help me build out different aspects of my cartooning world, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's a great.
No, I think you hit it right on the head.
Yeah. So for me, it's no individual person, but it's different people really doing amazing things in one aspect of their career that I'm like, wow, I have to learn from them on how they do it. And it's also in a childlike way. It's also looking at another adult and going, oh, I didn't know that was possible. I guess I could do that too. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I never would have thought it was possible to hire someone else to help with my cartooning stuff until I saw, I guess, Penny Arcade do it, you know, back 5-10 years ago. And then that became a goal of mine.
And the thought of splitting up writing chores like Scott does with Dylan is something the way we were taught to think about comics growing up, or the way we taught ourselves, where we assumed it was a singular act, and we didn't see, you know, the Japanese manga con and the studios that were putting out works in Europe, or at least we were blind to a lot of that stuff, where it's like, oh yeah, you can actually bring somebody in, and if that person understands your writing voice well enough, they can come in and write material that you can. It's never going to be perfect, but then you can take that, polish it up a little bit, and put forth that same kind of content that you've been putting out. That's something I would have never considered before he did it.
Yeah, it's interesting because the first 6 months to 12 months of it are sort of humbling in the sense that you're like, you realize that you have built up patterns and quote ways of doing things, quote, that you think are like, this is the way to make a comic. And it's sort of humbling to invite someone else into your process. And I'm sure Scott found this with Dylan or with artists that he's hired, that you have to be willing to accept an outcome that's 10%, 20%, 30% different than you would have done it, but maybe is much better, or maybe is just different. And it's interesting how going from a singular artistic expression to a joint or creative team is both exhilarating and humbling at the same time. You know, it's interesting to...
Yeah.
To do that. So I, again, going back to the spoiler alert, that's something that I would really focus, or I'm going to focus for you on my 5-year plan for your career is I think you are ready for that now, having somebody in house, I think.
Yeah. No, I think you're probably right.
I mean, really, all you need to do is to be able to justify growth that covers their salary plus, you know, 5 to 10%, you know, whatever to cover additional taxes and stuff. So you just need to be able to say, with one other person helping me produce comics, could I grow my business by their salary plus 5 or 10%, you know, whatever it is.
Right. No, that's absolutely right.
I think you could, although I have to think about how. And I can think of a couple ways, but that's going to be my challenge driving down to San Diego Comic-Con is figuring out fun ways to grow Brad's business.
Well, on that note, I'm very excited for you to do Comic-Con because I think at least once, well, I'll try to get you on the horn and see how things are going down there because it is the big comic show of the year. So I always, even now that I'm not going any longer, I do tune in and try to find out what's going on.
Well, and I want you to know, it should not go unsaid that I exhibited with Brad for, I don't know, 10 years, 12 years at Comic-Con and other places. And you are still very missed in my heart when I go to Comic-Con. And I hope you take that for the praise that it is.
I do. I appreciate it.
Anyway, I will be sending a video update to all our Patreon backers. So definitely look for that over at patreon.com/comiclab. And maybe we'll get some audio from Brad and I on the phone from the show floor as well. So a couple things to look for from Comic-Con.
Fantastic. Well, on that note, it's just as up to me to say, you've been listening to Comic Lab, the show about making comics and making a living from comics.
Your hosts have been Brad Geiger, the editor of webcomics.com and cartoonist of Evil Inc. at evil-comic.com.
And Dave Kellett, co-director of Stripped and cartoonist of Sheldon at sheldoncomics.com and Drive at drivecomic.com.
The Comic Lab theme song is used with permission from Andy Creighton at theworldrecord.net. And this episode of Comic Lab was edited by Matt Woodard of Woodsong Productions at www.woodsong.media.
Comic Lab is made possible by your support on patreon.com/comiclab. So we'll go ahead and say that twice. patreon.com/comiclab.